Welcome to Compliance Pointers, where we take an in-depth look into the latest news, trends, and challenges surrounding information security, privacy, and marketing compliance. Let's dive in with your host, Jordan Eisner.
Welcome back to another episode of Compliance Pointers and another episode with the privacy prophet himself, Matthew Edward Dumiak. Matt, for short. How are you?
Doing well, Jordan. How are you? Good to see you.
Pretty good. This is your first week in, what, a month that you're not in Texas, but you're in your hometown of Atlanta, Georgia.
That's right. It's good to be back. I did start off February 3 weeks in a row in the great state of Texas. So a couple different cities, though. So it was nice. Good to see you around.
Right. And I would imagine after being on the road for 3 straight weeks, everything's a little bigger, just kind of like Texas.
Yeah. My calendar is certainly a little bit bigger, as is the inbox. So.
Oh, okay. I just meant, dietarily.
Oh, yeah. Enjoyed plenty of barbecue. Absolutely. You were there for one of them. So, Yeah, there's some great food there. And as you know, when you're on the road, you've really got to be disciplined. And, you know, make sure that you don't let things get out of hand. No, I tried to be. So,
yeah,
spoiled myself, indulged occasionally. But as I've gotten older, I've realized how important it is to maybe, you know, have a balance with your going out to eat and what you get. So,
yeah, easier said than done.
I do seem to recall enjoying some banana pudding with you. So maybe I wasn't that good, but.
Yeah, I've been on the road a lot too. And then what you usually have to do is you have to double down and be that much healthier when you're home because it's a little more difficult on the road. So Thursday when I was back in office last week, I opted for the small blizzard at Dairy Queen instead of the medium or the large.
Yeah, I wish I could say the same. I opted with the medium, but it was a great choice.
Okay, for those of you who don't know Matt or don't recognize him by seeing his face, he is known as the Privacy Prophet, but he is also a 15-year vet at Compliance Point, lead guru for all things data privacy and marketing compliance here at Compliance Point.
Yep.
The organization that sponsors this podcast, Compliance Pointers. And today, he's going to be given, I kind of looked at this podcast and we talked about some of the topics and questions, Matt. I look at this as if you were just implanted in an organization right now that feels like they've probably been doing pretty well from a data privacy standpoint, in terms of maturity of their operations. Security, even other things, maybe a mid-market company or even small that's been moving along and trying to do what they can. And you were implanted today and they said, hey, you're an expert on this. What are the top 5 things we should be concerned with or what should we make sure we're doing right now to really lock the doors, clasp the windows shut, and ensure that we're doing some of the perhaps maybe not higher risk, but common areas that organizations are maybe getting themselves in a little hot water on. Does that sound good?
Yeah, that sounds good, man.
So what should be top priority for organizations in 2025 from both a compliance, regulatory compliance standpoint, but also operations? Right? As a lot of organizations have learned, it's not just about putting policies and processes and technology in place to comply with these regulations that have been in place for several years now and continue to spring up and be put in place, but also building a privacy program and a systematic approach and how that requires ongoing maintenance and management and personnel and technology and yada, yada, yada.
Yada, yada, yada. All the talking points. Exactly right. Yeah, absolutely. So I think the first thing on our list, it's data protection impact assessments.
Oh, are you stealing some of my thunder now? Okay, I'll just answer some of the questions. But go ahead.
I like that. Yeah, actually, let's reverse this. So, Jordan, could you tell us about your experience in conducting data protection impact assessments for organizations, why it's important, why it's going to be on the regulators' radar this year, and what organizations need to do about that?
So a data privacy impact assessment, or also known as a DPIA, is an assessment of the impact on your data privacy program that, you know, some sort of issue
so
could present, right?
You're
adding a vendor, adding technology, implementing something new into the organization, or introducing something new to the organization. What are the implications that could have on your data privacy program, posture, maturity, compliance, risk, and so on. And depending the type of company you are, you got to do these pretty frequently. But that's about it.
That's
You should probably answer the question.
Yeah. No, you got about half of it, right? So absolutely, an organization should do a DPIA to understand how certain processing activities will impact the data privacy program. That's important. That's something you should continue to, or businesses should include in a DPIA. The main point of doing a DPIA, though, and why it's going to be required by the regulations, is that for organizations to understand the impact or risks to the consumer's data privacy from that initiative. So the states have a lot of different requirements around DPIAs in terms of when they should be conducted. Sometimes I see that businesses are overdoing that, where they do any type of change in a system, technology, new types of personal information collected, they're going to do a DPIA no matter what. Hard to argue against that unless resources are really constrained. And, you know, that is certainly a pain point for a lot of businesses. On the other end, though, and what I see more commonly is that organizations, businesses are not doing DPIAs often enough. And that is because they're unaware of the requirements. They don't have the resources. And these DPIAs, as we'll talk about a little bit, they can be somewhat cumbersome to conduct. They can take a while. It's really a cross-functional exercise in terms of at least the information that you need across the organization. You have to talk to a lot of different folks. It could be the marketing team, it could be the website team, it could be the development team, sales even, whoever might be involved in that processing activity, we would want to talk to do that. Why I've listed it as one of the top priorities is because I believe that it's going to become more of a priority for regulators as these laws go into effect. The majority of the states have an obligation for businesses to do a DPIA in certain circumstances. And many times they can be made, or they must be made available upon request. And so I think of it as likely, as we see the enforcement regime grow, as we see that the states are more comfortable with presenting or pushing out inquiries to companies and businesses about what they're doing and how they're complying with their privacy law. If they have a question about a specific processing activity or they're getting some complaints from consumers, I believe they're going to request the DPIA first and foremost and say, why don't you show us your DPIA for this process? We've gotten some complaints. What does that look like?
Why do you believe that? We'll give you that hunch.
Yeah. So it's a good question. So because it can be made available upon request, and it's going to break down, it's going to give the regulator a great idea of a couple things. Do they have they operationalized privacy throughout their program? What is the processing activity that's generating these complaints? Because I want to see that in terms of why. And so that's going to should be all outlined within the DPIA. And there are a few things that regulators can look at from a privacy program perspective. We've talked about it on some other podcasts, like privacy policy, some cookie governance that you can check out online. But this is one of those things that organizations are required to conduct in certain circumstances and has to be made available upon request. So it's something that I think the AG sees that as a low hurdle. The state AGs, I should say, see that as a low hurdle to go, okay, they're supposed to be doing these and they need to make it available upon request. Let's see them. And it doesn't have to go even as formal as a full-blown investigation or some type of, you know, civil investigative demand with a formal launching of that. I think it can be a simple inquiry to the company to see the DPIA and amongst a couple of other things. So,
okay.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
And you also talked previously about ad tech governance.
Yeah, that's a pretty straightforward and easy one to talk about with data privacy, because it's a priority for the states. every state privacy law has the requirement to opt out of target, to allow the consumers to opt out of targeted advertising. There have been bulletins from state AGs about the importance of cookie governance. The new one, we talked about the one, I think, on the last podcast or maybe the podcast before that with the New York, exactly right, out of New York, but it continues to be a priority in California. There continues to be investigative sweeps, if you will, for lack of a better term, regarding that type of thing. And then when we talk about just ad tech governance in general, and we've talked about this a little bit too, but the trap and trace lawsuits out there regarding the wiretapping, also seen as wiretapping under the California Invasion of Privacy Act. It's really clear that professional plaintiffs or plaintiff attorneys have identified an area of weakness for organizations in terms of either they could go the wiretapping route, which is one way to go about it. But as we've seen in the news, there are also lawsuits or cases where perhaps a business was presenting an option to consumers to opt out of certain types of cookies and trackers. The consumer selected that option and it didn't work. And so basically that's going to go back to falling under an unfair deceptive trade practice. And so kind of a broad sweeping kind of enforcement mechanism, if you will, for every state to look under, but the plaintiff attorneys have also identified that. So, you know, I think that's why we call that out, is that businesses really don't want to be an easy target for that. It's pretty easy to check.
And trap and trace, that is?
The trap and trace, yep, the wiretapping.
Sounds like a Metallica song from the mid-80s.
Yeah.
Well, I think of Trapped Under Ice from the album Ride the Lightning.
Okay, I don't know that one. So,
please
do. So, I checked out the song you sent me on Friday. Agreed.
Yeah,
it's
off my angry playlist.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Got it. And so, you know, I think it would be, if we were talking about top priorities, that's a no-brainer just because of the risk around it and that it's easy to check on, right? So sure. It's got to be up there. It's up there in the privacy space with AI. It's just like everybody's talking about it. But we continue to talk about it because it continues to be an area of risk. So
businesses speaking of New York,
really need to make sure they do that. So,
because one thing I remember about that was that New York did not actually have a privacy law, but here they were commenting on or advising on how, you know, businesses need to do that from an ad tech governance standpoint.
That's right.
But now it does look like they're putting privacy law in place, but specific to health information.
Yep.
Which brings specific me to health our information. Next point. Are we going to be seeing more of this? Right, for protected health information, PHI. Mm-hmm. Any states focused on anything around that other than New York?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's area number three. States are focused. It's not as many as the comprehensive state privacy laws just yet, but four states are looking at these types of laws that will go and govern how organizations are, businesses are processing health information. It's a little bit unique in that obviously we have HIPAA at the federal level, at the national level.
Obviously.
These state laws take a little bit of a different approach in that they broaden that definition of what health information is. Mm-hmm. And they say they have additional obligations for organizations in terms of collecting consent, the types of notices, opt-outs, even disclosures around the types of third parties that this information is shared with. And again, I think the broadened definition, though, is what's critical. And, you know, as you're aware, we have a healthcare practice. I'm not on the healthcare team. I know enough to be dangerous about HIPAA, but that there are some components there, some interesting nuances with these state laws that have made these definitions of health information so broad, including like when you look at the potentially information that's collected via a wearable device could be considered that, or if an organization was traditionally not seen as being covered by HIPAA because maybe because they collect adverse reaction information about their product or something like that, these laws come in and really broaden how that's defined. And not only that, but there's obviously fines under these laws. And I think that it's an area of focus. They're passing these laws for a reason at the state level. And, you know, we'll see where that goes. But to kind of talk through a little bit of, there's New York, which it hasn't passed yet, but it looks promising. But there's My Health, My Data in Washington. There's a law in Nevada that looks promising as well. I almost said Las Vegas, right? So nope, that state is actually Nevada. I don't know if many people knew that. But
what's the capital?
And then the Reno. What is it?
Carson City. Keep going.
Carson City. Okay, I think I did not know that. So unfortunately, I have to admit that on the podcast. So,
Washington, Nevada, New York. What's the other?
Connecticut has expanded their privacy law to further define sensitive categories of information. So they're amending their privacy law, but the other states, they've outright created their own law to govern this data. So
I always try and find a theme, but one's not coming to me with those four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think all four might have a capital city of Carson City. I think that it is something certainly that the state legislators are looking at, and you know, we'll see if they're new, so we'll see if it's enforced or not. But I do think understanding business needs to understand the impact of these laws exactly,
and who enforces them. Is it the states, and what does the OCR think about that, because HIPAA, how long is it going to take on some of this stuff? Because I'm just one person and I haven't looked into it very closely, but a lot of the HIPAA violations or allegations, they take a long time to prosecute.
Mm-hmm.
Long time. Years and years and years.
Yeah.
And you're talking about protecting data and InfoSec personnel and even data privacy personnel. Just the state of things today. People aren't staying in jobs as long as sometimes these cases take.
Right.
Not that that's necessarily has a direct impact on it. They still bring the people back or interview them elsewhere, as you've seen.
We've seen, yeah, that's right. They do call them back, yeah. Just because you're off the payroll doesn't mean you're off the hook.
Right. Can't escape that.
No.
They're going to find you. What else needs to be a priority?
The other item we talked about in preparation was children's personal information. So realizing that, you know, it's a little bit unique now, the timing here. So the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act, there's some finalized rules that update the requirements under that. Also, even under the state privacy laws, they have some obligations and some amendments around collecting information of minors. A lot, it's going to be consent forward, right? It's going to, a lot of these requirements are going to rely upon either on verifiable parental consent and really putting the onus on businesses to ensure that they're taking the necessary steps to actually get consent from the parent and not just say, oh, I had an unchecked box. Well, what kid isn't going to just check that and go, yeah, I'm allowing my child to visit this website or for you to collect my information or whatever it might be, right? So there's some obligations.
Very difficult to do, though.
It is. And so that's where I say this is a little bit unique timing, because with the changes to the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act, that was finalized. The Trump executive order, however, in terms of the FTC and the requirement that agency seek approval from the White House for rules and regulations and initiatives or priorities that they're going to pursue, slows that down a little bit. So that rule was finalized, but it wasn't published in the register, which means that it's subject to now going through to the White House to get finalized and then get published in the not finalized, but get published. So they're basically, the White House needs to approve it to move forward. The commission, that's 2-2 right now, 2 Republicans, 2 Democrats. That will be eventually 3 Republicans and 2 Democrats likely. We'll see where that goes. that rule when it was finalized. The individual that's the head of the FTC at the moment, Ferguson, he voted in favor of the finalized rules with some commentary regarding or some concerns about some of those requirements. But, you know, it's just kind of up in, not, I hesitate to say up in the air, but I guess that's a good term for it. It's kind of up in the air right now. We'll see where that goes. And so it may be that the states are really the ones who are pursuing through the through either existing privacy laws or through amendments the the protection of children's data, which, you know, okay. I mean, you and I have had several conversations about that in terms of social media and how detrimental that can be to both adults and kids. I mean, even, you know, so we've talked about that at
directly
length.
Directly and indirectly.
Right. And I think that the states see that too. And so they're really looking at that. There's already, you know, there was already a prohibition on targeted advertising without consent, but they're going to put some controls. I think they're going to really look at, and I mean, the COPPA did, but then the states too are going to put some obligations around organizations in terms of targeted advertising to people under the age of 16 and what that looks like, including maybe even a consent obligation, which is not the requirement today for targeted advertising, period, in the U.S. That's more of an EU approach, right? So now when we think through, well, you know, look through if an organization believes that they're collecting and targeting individuals who are under the age of 16, how are you going to get that consent is kind of a different story, right? There's several tools out there in the marketplace that allow organizations to manage cookie consent, but we'll just have to see where that goes.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. And you mentioned Up in the Air. Great movie.
George Clooney.
I'm sure that's what you meant. Yeah.
Yep,
yeah.
It is. Yeah.
Business
consultants.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. As a wrap-up then, or a final question, final topic, this has to be in there. Or tell me if you think everybody's just doing this pretty well and don't need to worry about it. But what about website compliance? Privacy notices, cookie opt-outs, cookie functionality. Opt-outs. You know, you talk about... trapped in trays. And
I think businesses are starting to realize how challenging it is to ensure that your website remains compliant with data privacy laws. And here's what I mean. I'll give an illustrative use case. Working with a client through an assessment, they had previously implemented not too long ago a cookie preference center with website developers. On the surface, sounded like a firm implementation. Correct. Right. They followed their software development lifecycle. They got the Google Tag Manager down, all of that, right?
It's like they won back-to-back Super Bowls, then all of a sudden.
And then all of a sudden. Exactly right.
They get their teeth kicked
in. Compliance Point privacy team comes in.
Oh, no.
Does some simple tests and finds that the website is not honoring preferences, the script isn't in the right place, or actually they duplicated the script. And so there's just a lot that can go wrong. And you're working with people who, as of today, and I think this will evolve, as most things do, they don't have privacy experience. So, you know, many times they're working to implement something, they test it, it looks good, and then someone comes along and puts another script in there and breaks the
website.
They're
not thinking about the sustainability. Which goes back to the top of this call, really, with it's not a set it and forget it. And people always hear that and they go, no. You have to think about the long term and maintenance and management and roles and responsibilities and checkpoints, PIAs.
Yep, and doing DPIAs, right? It's a requirement to do those for targeted advertising.
Awareness across the organization as to the implications of marketing or web development or somebody changing the website after a lot of these changes have been made and implemented. Mm-hmm. What that can mean and how could that expose your organization to potential risk? You know, how could you be trapped under the ice?
Right. Trapped under the ice and bring it full circle. I love that. And that brings up a bonus topic too. And I realize we're coming up against time here, but training that's relevant and meaningful.
Oh, I thought you were going to move
to your point.
Bonus topic. Going to talk about Metallica greatest hits. Okay, go ahead.
Also, really important.
You're more of a Black Sabbath guy, though. Be honest.
I do love Black Sabbath, but it can't just be the learning management system out of the box training. That's great. Good for check the box exercise, but those who are involved in the privacy program and have privacy responsibilities, you have to make sure that training is tailored for them, or else you're going to continue to fall into this trap of setting something up and then something slips through the cracks.
And it is not a good feeling to be trapped under that ice.
No, exactly right. Don't be trapped under the privacy ice.
We got pretty dark here today on this podcast. So that's okay, though. We've kept it pretty light recently. So we want organizations to heed the warnings around this. So, all right, Matt. Good stuff. Thanks for coming on. And for those
for
of you
me.
Listening and watching that desperately want to talk to the Privacy Prophet, he's available. He's on LinkedIn. He can be accessed right through our website, through calling in, many different channels that you can reach out to Compliance Point and set up a call and do fact-finding, discovery-type session, talk about maybe some of your issues, what we'd recommend, and if we could be a good fit to help you. So please don't hesitate to reach out. That's compliancepoint.com or email us at connect@compliancepoint.com. Reach out to, like I said, Matt and myself individually. We're both on LinkedIn. We'd love to chat. Till next time.